Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice-to-text feature, and mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, A-R-M-O-I-R-E.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. A mom takes her 6-year-old son out of school for a day at the zoo. It's basically every kid's dream. But Amy Fry Pittson failed to tell her husband about these plans. So he was pretty confused when he went to pick up his son Timothy at the end of the school day, only to be told by the school secretary that he was gone. Amy was found shortly thereafter, but Timothy remains missing nearly 10 years later, leaving a shattered father living in limbo, waiting for his son to come home. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Timothy Pittson. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you so much for joining us once again. So this is an interesting case, and it's one that I was familiar with. I'm assuming you've never heard of it.
Of course not.
Okay. This was actually requested, I didn't tell you this, by our oldest son, Cooper.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was at his dad's house, and he just texted me one night, and he was like, "You guys should do the Timothy Pittson case." And he's only 13, so I had no idea like how he even knew about this, but of course the answer was the same as the answer to everything.
Reddit?
YouTube.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, it's a really weird case, right? He's like, yeah, it is. It's so strange. So, you know, it is one that's been around for a while, but and it did gain national attention again a few years ago. So we're going to talk about this. As I mentioned in the intro, Timothy has been missing for over 10 years, but his father still, to this day, holds out hope that he's alive out there somewhere. Before we dive in, though, I, of course, want to take a moment and thank those of you who have joined us over on our Patreon page. So thank you, Shay, Kay, and Camille. We really appreciate you. And if you would like to join us, you can do so over at patreon.com/attwgpod.
Thank you guys so much.
But now let's get into Timothy's story. Timothy James Pittson was born on October 18th, 2004, to Jim and Amy Pittson. He was the couple's only child and was considered by both to be somewhat of a miracle baby. Jim was actually a cancer survivor.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so he battled Hodgkin's lymphoma when he was 20. And he had believed that the chemotherapy treatments that he had had back then had left him sterile. Mm. Amy, who had been married 3 times prior to her marriage to Jim, was ambivalent about having children. She suffered from depression, and she worried about passing that along to any future children. So, you know, that was never really in her plan. But when she became pregnant, the couple both believed that it was a sign, that it was just meant to be. So at this point, they had been dating for around a year or so. The pair had met in 2002 at a party in Iowa. It was actually a going away party for Amy at a job she was leaving. She was moving back to Illinois. Jim was in Iowa on a temporary work assignment, and he was just randomly invited to this party by a friend. But, you know, they hit it off and kind of like started talking and it got into a relationship. But because Amy was leaving Iowa and going to Illinois, the beginning of this relationship was long distance. But it was going so well that Jim eventually followed Amy to Illinois and they settled in Aurora, where Amy's father set them both up with jobs at his commercial real estate company.
What movie's set in Aurora?
I don't know. Probably like
isn't that like Wayne's World?
Yes. You know, it is Wayne's World. You're right. That is Aurora, Illinois. Yep, you're absolutely right. Because it was the Aurora Public Access Channel.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Amy and Jim ended up getting married in a simple park ceremony when Amy was 4 months pregnant with Timothy. Prior to her pregnancy, though, and really throughout her entire life, Amy had battled with depression, as I had mentioned. And this was certainly something that the two had to deal with in the context of their relationship, because it sounds like it was pretty severe. Prior to her meeting Jim, Amy had attempted suicide once that he knew about. She told him that she drove her car onto some train tracks, only deciding to drive off at the last minute. Afterwards, she checked herself into a psych ward for a week-long stay where she was prescribed medication and received counseling. The second time she tried to take her own life was shortly after she and Jim had gotten together while they were still long distance. According to an article in Chicago Magazine, Amy went to a job interview. Now, she did great at this interview and ended up actually getting the job. But, you know, brains work in weird ways sometimes. And even though she did really well, she was driving home from the interview and was just overcome with this feeling of anxiety and hopelessness. She went and drove her car to the edge of an embankment. Eventually, after not hearing from her for a while and kind of freaking out, Jim received a call from a hospital. They said that Amy had taken a handful of sleeping pills and driven down the embankment. She survived, but had suffered a fractured vertebrae and hypothermia. So yes, their relationship certainly had challenges from the very beginning. But they loved each other. And, you know, Jim wasn't the type of person who was going to be scared away by this. Because like I said, you know, that second incident happened while they were still long distance. And Jim was committed enough to the relationship that he, you know, not only proceeded, but like he picked up and moved to Illinois to be with her.
Well, and good on him for that.
Yeah.
Because like that could be a very easy way out for anybody else.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, but no, he stuck with her. And, you know, to be fair, like, according to Jim, when Amy was on her medication, like, she was great, you know? She was just a great person to be around. Like, they were obviously very in love.
Yeah.
She had been prescribed Ativan for her anxiety and both Lexapro and Wellbutrin for her depression, which, like, and I'm not a medical expert at all, but like, I knew that you could be, that people are often prescribed, like, one medication for anxiety, one medication for depression. I've never heard of, like, two medications for depression at the same time. Like the Ativan and an antidepressant makes sense to me, but, like, an Ativan and Lexapro and Wellbutrin all at the same time, like, that, I did not know that was done.
Yeah, I don't know anything about those type of drugs, so I don't know what the interaction would be like.
But apparently, again, this is all according to that Chicago Magazine article, which is a fantastic article, and really, it was published around the 10-year anniversary of Timothy's disappearance, and really takes a deep dive and interviews Jim, and really gives a lot of insight into, you know, their background and relationship. But anyway, that's what they said in the article. But in any case, the problem was that she wasn't always good about staying on her meds. And when she didn't take them regularly, things would get tense. Jim told Chicago Magazine that when she wasn't on her medication, she would have, quote, big highs and lows. She would become real emotional. If I asked whether she was taking her pills, she'd yell at me, "Don't ask me about that," end quote. And so pretty soon it just turned into this thing that, you know, he just started avoiding altogether.
Yeah, which also is not great.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously, you need that support and that kind of encouragement to to stay on your medication. But at the same time, I'm sure her being on the medication and having these issues filled her with more anxiety,
right,
which made it even worse, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, it sounds to me like they were both kind of just getting through things the way that they knew how to get through them. Yeah. You know, they were doing what they were equipped to do. And I don't think at this point either one of them was in the wrong, but it does sound like they definitely could have been benefited by like early couples counseling.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't mean to sound like I was blaming him.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah.
To deal with as a partner. And, you know, he would like, it doesn't sound like he had any prior experience in this or anything like right, that.
Right. Or any like guidelines as far as what to do and where to go.
Exactly. Yeah. So he just like I said, he just kind of started avoiding the subject and just dealing with the highs and lows as they came. And so, yeah. And so things just kind of got progressively worse in their relationship. But all of this did seem to change after Timothy was born, which I actually find really interesting because typically you're not permitted to take anti-anxiety or antidepressants like at all while pregnant. So to me, I mean, if you're already dealing with issues that are severe enough that you've attempted to take your own life on more than one occasion, and then when you're pregnant, if presumably you're not allowed to be on your medication, plus you've got all these pregnancy hormones, you know, running through your body that have never been there before, like that seems like a very fraught situation to me.
Yeah, but maybe the fact that she was unexpectedly pregnant gave her something to focus on. You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, but it maybe it did. And maybe that was enough. Like, it doesn't always work like that, but maybe it did. Yeah, because even now, you know, 10 years over, well, I mean, this is like 16 years later since she was pregnant, you know, Jim doesn't say like, oh yeah, the pregnancy was rough or anything like that. Like, he doesn't say anything about the pregnancy itself. And in fact, after Timothy was born, Amy's sister Kara says that it was like her life had finally been fulfilled. So Kara was also interviewed for that article in Chicago Magazine. And at one point, she talked about how Amy was always searching for something. Like, she was always looking for something external to find happiness. So she'd be like, okay, well, maybe if I just switch my job, maybe if I just move, maybe if I just, you know, find a new partner, then that will bring me happiness. She was always just looking for something outside of herself to bring her that happiness. And, you know, because what it sounds like is she did switch jobs fairly often. Jim was her fourth husband and she was in her 30s when they got married. She just had this kind of constantly looking for the next thing feeling. But Kara says that when Timothy was born, like that finally seemed to go away for her. You know, she finally seemed content and like she had found her purpose in life, basically. And things did stay like really good for a while. But, you know, as it turned out, having a baby didn't cure her depression.
Can't really imagine why that wouldn't be the answer.
Yeah. I mean, it had kept it at bay for a while because, again, it just gave her something else to focus on, something right. that she had never had before, and something that did bring her personal fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's...
It also came with a lot of struggles.
Yeah.
Again, probably added to her anxiety once things start falling into a rhythm. Mm-hmm. And if the baby has issues or whatever that maybe she's blaming herself for. I mean, there's a whole host of, you know, the other side of...
Well, yeah. Parenthood is not easy, as yeah. it turns out.
Yeah.
But both of the parents doted on their son. Jim played matchbox cars with him and gave him like a little go-kart when he was 3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Amy would take him to the zoo and to the water park. Like that was their thing. I mean, it really does sound like Tim had a great life, like a great childhood. But in 2010 and early 2011, Amy's depression came back stronger than ever. She also lost her job when her father had to shut down his company. Now, remember when they moved to Aurora, they both started working for her father at his commercial real estate firm. But Jim, by that time, had actually already left and had a new job, which was ended up being really good. So it's not like they were both out of work at the right. same time. But, you know, again, losing an income, they weren't in the position where that was
like a not stressful situation. So, you know, they started to have money problems, which obviously adds to any other stressors in a marriage. According to Jim, at this point, the couple basically started arguing about everything, small things, big things, just whatever it was. But honestly, their marriage had always been fraught. I mentioned that Amy had been married 3 times prior to Jim. Well, in 2008, so when Timothy was around 2, Jim discovered that Amy was still meeting up with one of her ex-husbands. The pair had apparently just been to lunch a few times, but he did find text messages that were planning a rendezvous while Jim was going to be out of town. So when Jim found these text messages, he was pretty blunt. He told Amy, look, if you want to be with this guy, go ahead. We'll get divorced and I'll fight to get custody of Tim. According to Amy's sister, Kara, the idea of losing her son terrified Amy. Though she did like come from money and could have gotten a good lawyer to represent her, which Jim definitely knew, she was afraid that her history of mental illness would work against her in a custody hearing. So, I mean, basically Jim's threat worked. Like, and he does believe that she stopped communicating with that guy.
Well, that's all well and good. That stopped the potential affair.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that that probably didn't sit well with her. Basically using her son as a means to kind of keep her in the marriage?
No, I agree. And it's not that he was saying that explicitly, but you're right. I mean, that is basically what it was, even if that wasn't his explicit attempt.
Right. Even if that wasn't the intention, she may have taken it that way.
Right.
And in a marriage that was already filled with conflict and conflict avoidance, oddly enough, I feel like that would just probably continue to add to the stressors that she was feeling.
But yeah, I mean, it did. It just kind of kept on building and building. And to that point, in May of 2011, Amy decided to go on a girls' trip to the Bahamas with her best friend, which in and of itself, like, that's fine.
Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah, good for her. But she didn't actually like discuss this with Jim at all. She just unilaterally decided it. And that rubbed Jim the wrong way. But Amy simply told him, you can't stop me. Again, it's just like they're clearly not working in a functional way at this point, right? Because I think in general, if they were in a like healthy place, Amy would have approached it in a way that said, hey, my best friend like wants to take a girls trip to Jamaica. Like, what do you think? And Jim would have been like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, no, it sounds to me like there's a lot of underlying resentment on both sides.
Exactly.
A lot of trust issues and then lack of communication built out of the fact that they pretty much ignored issues and conflicts as a way to get by.
Like, right. Like there are so many elephants in the room that they're just stampeding and just crushing everything in their path at this point.
Exactly.
But they got to the point where instead of approaching something that shouldn't be difficult or filled with strife or whatever, they both just were coming from a place of, I think you're right, resentment. Right. And it just blew up because she came at it in a very offensive, like, I'm doing this and you can't say anything about it. And then
which sets him off.
Exactly. Yeah. So she ends up going to the trip and, you know, Jim was pissed. And so like she was gone and he was home and he was pissed. Like it just was not great. But when Jim picked her up from the airport, she got in the car and just acted like the argument had never happened.
Which seems like it's very typical of their relationship.
Yeah. So Jim is like, okay, well, maybe she just needed to get away and like spend some time with her friend and, you know, de-stress and unwind. So maybe things will get better now. To a point, he was right. I mean, it's not like everything was magically perfect when she got back, but, you know, things were pleasant for a little while. About a week after her return, though, Amy left work early and told Jim she wasn't feeling well. So Jim made arrangements to go into work late the next day so that he could take Tim to school. But interestingly, Amy still planned on going to work that day, which was May 11th of 2011. So Jim drove Timothy to school and dropped him off a little bit before 8. He then dropped Amy off of work and went to work himself. When he left work a few hours later, Tim's school had a short kindergarten day. He went in to pick up his son only to be faced with a confused school secretary who told him that Timothy wasn't there. So Jim was like, what? The secretary told him that Timothy had been signed out shortly after he arrived. Jim asked to see who signed him out, and sure enough, it was Amy.
You said that he drove Amy to work, though.
Yeah, so that confused me, too. So it took me a little bit to get to this because it wasn't explicitly stated in what I read. But I did read something else that said that Amy's car had been parked at her work. So what I think happened was that the day before, when she said she wasn't feeling well, Jim actually came to pick her up. Okay. Because apparently, I read in a different article that she had said she was suffering from vertigo and you can't drive when you have vertigo. Right.
Okay.
So I think what happened is that he came to pick her up because she said she had vertigo. She, I guess, you know, was feeling better, decided to go to work the next day, but her car was there, so he drove her. And I think the expectation was that she would work and then drive herself home in the evening.
Right.
And gotcha. So my guess, because Jim was already planning on picking Timothy up, I don't know if she was either trying to like make up, you know, time that she had missed the day before, or if he was like, okay, you're probably good to drive yourself, but maybe I should pick up Timothy just to be on the safe side.
So that only you die in a car accident. it's kind of fucked up.
Oh my God, David, you die first for once. Anyway, once Jim finds out that Amy signed Timothy out, he of course calls her, but she doesn't answer. So now at this point though, Jim is more angry than worried. Like he's thinking like, why did you take off with him for the day without telling me? You know, he's just thinking this is basically a repeat of the Bahamas thing, but now with Timothy. So he's just thinking that she's being inconsiderate, not that like his son is in danger. He assumed that she was going to be back that night or, you know, later in the afternoon or whatever. And he was just more angry about the lack of communication than anything else. So Jim ended up taking the rest of the day off and basically just waited. He was thinking that maybe Amy was still mad about the Bahamas fight because it wasn't uncommon for her to just kind of take off for a while to clear her head. But she never did that with Timothy, you know, like that's just something she would go off on her own and do. So as the day went on, he continued to call and leave messages. When she still wasn't picking up, he called her sister Kara, but Kara hadn't heard from her either. Again, like he didn't want to panic, but while he was home just kind of waiting to hear from his wife, he started looking around and he saw that her medication was in the cabinet. So he knew that he didn't have it with her, which, you know, that in and of itself is not weird, but he saw that the bottles were full. So it appeared that she possibly hadn't been taking them for a while. So when the evening rolled around and he still couldn't get in touch with her, Jim then did decide to call the Aurora police. Now, this next part makes me insane.
Okay.
The police came and they told him, just give her more time. 24 hours at least.
That was their response?
Yeah. Which, okay, like, to an extent, I get, because they're married. She's a custodial parent.
Yeah, but she's also a person that has a history of mental health issues and attempted suicide and is off her medication.
Exactly. Like, that's my point. This isn't just, like, they're late coming home. I mean, yes, she has serious, diagnosed, documented, like, mental illness episodes that could potentially put her 6-year-old son in danger.
Yeah. I mean, that's critical missing and endangered child.
Right.
That's what that is.
Yes. So to me, like, that warrants a much swifter response than, you know, the mom has.
Give it a day.
Right. Like, they'll come back. I'm sure it's fine.
I'll come back on my next shift and see how it's going.
Yeah, well, that's like literally what happened. So this day, May 11th, 2011, that we're talking about was a Wednesday. That's when Amy took Timothy, and it was that evening, like around 8 p.m., that Jim initially called the police. So, yeah, the next day, officers showed up at work, at Jim's work, and I don't know if it was the same officers. They're like, oh, yeah, who did come back on their next shift, or if it was different ones. But either way, the next day. And they said, you know what? All right, I guess we can do a missing persons report.
I mean, one would hope. This is now overnight.
Yeah.
Like, and no sign of either of them.
No, no communication, nothing.
It's a great response.
Yeah. So the police filed the missing persons report on Thursday, the 12th. The next day, on Friday, Jim received what he must have thought at first was very good news from Kara. Kara and Amy's mom had actually called her and told Kara that Amy had called her. So Amy called their mom. Amy had said that everything was fine, that she just needed some time alone. So again,
alone with her six-year-old child?
Right. So from Jim's perspective, like, he's not happy, but everyone was kind of breathing a sigh of relief at this point because Amy got in contact with her mother. She said Tim was fine, like everything, like this was not cool, but everything seemed to be relatively okay. And everybody, you know, including Amy's family, like everybody just assumed she'd be back soon, but she wasn't. In fact, things got weirder that day on Friday. In addition to her mom, Amy also called Jim's brother, Chuck. And Chuck was confused. He was like, have you talked to Jim? Like, you should call him. He's very worried. And Amy told him, quote, Timothy is my son and I can do what I want, end quote.
That's not good.
No. As soon as she hung up, Chuck immediately called his brother, obviously. And then Jim then immediately called Amy three times, but she never answered. After what had to have been an uneasy night's sleep, Jim received a knock on his door early in the afternoon of Saturday, May 14th. It was two detectives with the Aurora Police Department. I mean, at first, Jim was relieved, like they must have found Tim and Amy. But his relief wouldn't last long. The detectives had terrible news for Jim. Amy had been found dead. She had been found in a motel room in Rockford, Illinois, which is about 70 miles from where they lived in Aurora. Amy had died by suicide. She had used a box cutter to slash her neck and her wrist. She also left a note. Now, the full note has never been released to the public. It's just kind of been paraphrased. But police say that in it, Amy apologized to the motel staff because they had to clean up after her. And she also said that Timothy was safe and that he was with someone who would love and take care of him, but that he would never be found.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. This is when Jim's world basically ended. His wife was dead and his son was gone, and nobody had any idea where he was. So at this point, the search for Timothy became incredibly urgent. Aurora police got to work retracing Amy's steps over the past several days. Using a combination of phone calls, texts, and her toll pass, police were able to reconstruct her journey and subsequently find witnesses and CCTV footage to flesh out the picture. So this is what they found. Amy's journey since Wednesday had covered over 500 miles in six counties in both Illinois and Wisconsin. Basically, as soon as Jim dropped her off at work, she turned right around and went back to Timothy's school, arriving at around 8:15. Apparently, she told them that there was a family emergency. It took about 20 minutes for Tim to get out of class, but when he did, surveillance footage showed him taking his mother's hand and leaving. At around 10 a.m., Amy and Tim arrived at a repair shop in LaGrange, which was about 30 miles away from Aurora. She needed a few minor repairs done to her car, a 2004 Ford Expedition. The repairs would take a few hours, but Brookfield Zoo was nearby, and Tim loved that place. So Amy got one of the employees to drive them there while they waited for the car to be finished. Amy and Tim returned to the repair shop that afternoon and collected the car. From there, they went to the Key Lime Cove Water Resort in Gurnee, Illinois. The next day, they checked out and went to the Kalahari Resort in Wisconsin Dells, which is another like fancy indoor water park. For those of you who are familiar with Great Wolf Lodge, these are similar to that. In fact, Key Lime Cove is actually now a Great Wolf Lodge. Thursday is when they got to Kalahari, and on the way, they stopped to buy Tim some more clothes because, you know, he didn't have any clothes with him. He just had his Spider-Man backpack from school. Amy also bought him a craft kit and a toy car. CCTV at the resort shows Amy and Tim checking out on Friday morning. And the footage is completely ordinary. You know, it's just he's waiting there like bored and fidgeting while she checks out.
Yeah, he doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah, like he and his mom would go to the zoo and they'd go to water parks. Like this isn't super strange for him. But this is the last known footage of Timothy. Friday afternoon after they checked out, Amy drove back to Illinois. This is also when she made all those calls to family. Amy and Tim both seemed fine on those calls, and Tim could be heard in the background. At one point, like every six-year-old ever, telling his mom that he was hungry. Amy even briefly put Tim on the line to talk to Jim's brother, Chuck.
Do we know what he said?
No, it's never been explicitly said, but it doesn't sound like it was anything interesting.
Okay.
From everything that I've read, like I get the general impression that during those calls in the afternoon when people heard Timothy in the background, he seemed completely normal, completely fine, like nothing was wrong whatsoever. But it was after those calls that things started to get more alarming. Amy turned her phone off and drove to Sterling, Illinois, which was about 80 miles away from Aurora. This is a pretty rural town, and Amy had no known connections there. But later, police would dig into her toll pass records, and they found that she had actually visited Sterling twice in the months leading up to her and Timothy's disappearance. Because her phone was turned off, police don't have a record of Amy's whereabouts for the next several hours. But they assume that whatever happened to Tim happened in the late afternoon to early evening of Friday, May 13th. Up to this point, all of the surveillance footage, whether it's from the resorts or the stores where she stopped, showed both her and Timothy. But around 8 p.m. on Friday, she was shown on CCTV at a grocery store where she purchased stationery and envelopes. In addition to the suicide note she left in the motel room, Amy also sent similar letters to her mother and her best friend whom she went on that Bahamas trip with. Timothy was not shown in the surveillance footage. Timothy was also not seen by staff when Amy checked into the motel in Rockford between 11:15 and 11:30 p.m. Amy's body would be discovered around 12:30 p.m. the next day. There was no sign of Timothy. Well, it's not that there wasn't any sign of Timothy. There was just no sign of him having been there physically. What they did find was Timothy's identification card. Now, this is one of those cards that was really big with like the advent of McGruff the crime dog. So it was this card that little kids would carry around that had their name and their address and their fingerprints on it. Because, you know, in the 80s and 90s, like stranger danger was huge. And even though this was the early 2000s, clearly they were still doing this. The only other item that was found in the room that would have possibly been connected to Tim was a partially consumed bottle of Triaminic, which is a children's cough and cold medicine. Now, obviously, the best case scenario at this point would be to find Timothy nearby unharmed. But since that didn't happen, police were still encouraged by the fact that Timothy's belongings weren't in the motel room. They hoped that that meant Timothy and his things were still out there somewhere. So investigators began the first of many searches based on where they knew Amy had been. But it wasn't just Aurora Police. They brought in several other agencies, including the FBI and the U.S. Marshals. They put up flyers with Timothy's face along her route. Nick Beck was notified, and Jim went on the news. This was a full court press that gained a lot of regional news coverage. Authorities received several tips and potential sightings, but nothing panned out.
So at this point, the obvious thought is that she met up with somebody in Sterling,
mm-hmm.
basically to give Timothy away.
Right. Like if her note is to be believed, then yes, that would be
yeah.
what makes sense.
So I'm wondering, you know, obviously she has no known, you said she has no known connections to anybody in Sterling.
Mm-mm.
But I'm wondering if Sterling was a middle ground meeting area for her and someone else. It makes more sense that it would be somebody that she knew or knows, as opposed to like finding somebody on the internet that wants a kid.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good point. So the investigation continued and police were looking for everything. Evidence that Timothy was dead, evidence that Timothy was alive. When they impounded and searched Amy's vehicle, they did find what they called a significant amount of blood in the back seat. Testing later confirmed that it was, in fact, Timothy's blood. But Jim and the family actually said that Timothy had had a severe nosebleed before he went missing, and the blood was actually from that. But this blood was the last piece of real evidence that the police had. You know, along with, like, Timothy's belongings, including the Spider-Man backpack that he was at school with and all the stuff that Amy had bought him, they did think it was a good sign that they didn't find that in the motel room. They also thought it was a good sign that they didn't find Timothy's booster seat in the car, because they thought, okay, well, maybe that means that she gave it to whomever, right?
Right.
But then like a week later, it turns out that it was at Timothy's grandma's house.
Hmm.
So that was kind of a dead end.
The cough syrup.
Yes.
You said a partially consumed bottle.
Uh-huh.
Do we know how much, did they ever find out where it was purchased? Like, was this something that was purchased?
Like during her stops?
Yeah.
I have not read that it was purchased during any of her stops. What I am interested in would be if they did an autopsy on her and if they did a tox screen as part of that and if any of it was in her system.
I'm sure that they did.
Right. But like, I haven't found that. But like, to me, that would be incredibly interesting, right? Because is that something that she took herself in order to aid in her taking her own life?
Right. Did she give a large dose to mm-hmm. Tim to either calm him down or put him to sleep to pass him off to somebody else?
Right. So, yeah, to me, whether or not she had that in her system, it would be a very interesting thing to know. And unfortunately, like, I don't.
Well, they're
don't.
Not going to release that.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. But that's one of those things that's kind of been bugging me. Despite everything that happened, Jim ended up burying his wife under a tombstone that said loving mother. Sightings continued to happen periodically, but were eventually disproven. No family came forward to say that Amy had given Timothy to them, and the trail went cold. But then, in April of 2019, nearly 8 years after his disappearance, there was what seemed to be a huge break in the case. A boy appeared and said that he was Timothy Pitson. So I believe this happened on either April 1st or 2nd of 2019. The news article I found was from the 3rd. And like, I remember when this happened. This is when I first heard of this case, because like I said, this got a ton of coverage regionally. So like, this was all over all of the Chicago papers and everything. But I don't recall this making it out here to the East Coast back in 2011. But I do remember this story from 2019. Because, I mean, it was a huge, huge deal. Because while 99% of people who are reported missing are found, they're usually found shortly after their disappearance. The percentage of people who go missing as a child and then are found alive years later is incredibly small. So this is, you know, gigantic news whenever it happens or potentially happens.
Yeah. It also adds hope to those that are still looking for their children.
Yeah, exactly. So this all happened in Newport, Kentucky, which is just across the bridge from Cincinnati, Ohio. A scared and agitated boy with a bruised face was seen wandering around a neighborhood. He eventually approached a woman and told her that he had been kidnapped and was being held at a local Red Roof Inn from which he had escaped. He went on to tell police that his name was Timothy Pitson, and he had been kidnapped and passed around for the past 7 years. He said that when he escaped from the Red Roof Inn, he had been held by two, quote, bodybuilder type men, end quote. Obviously, the agency, like Cincinnati police, are dealing with all this, and they immediately notified Aurora police, who then went to Cincinnati to interview this boy. And then they, in turn, notified Jim and notified Amy's family. Jim, of course, was thrilled about the prospect of finally seeing his son again, but, you know, he tried to temper his expectations.
Sure.
But Kara fully admits how she got her hopes up. She was like making plans. She was packing bags. She was, you know, figuring out logistics, you know, who's picking him up? Where is he going to go? Where is he going to stay? I mean, she was just 100% ready. For their part, police started to get a bad feeling when the boy claiming to be Timothy got cagey when they asked him to be fingerprinted. So this boy knew some information like Timothy's name and date of birth, but apparently didn't know things like the name of the family dog. Eventually, a DNA test was administered and the results came back proving that sadly this boy was not Timothy Pitson. In fact, he wasn't even a boy. He was a man. Brian Michael Rini was not 14, as Timothy would have been at the time, but 24. He had actually been released from Belmont Correctional Institution in Ohio less than a month before this, after serving a 14-month sentence for burglary and vandalism.
So what was the point of that?
Well, this was actually not the first time that Rini had claimed to be someone else. According to a December 2020 article from CBS News, authorities said that he had twice identified himself as a victim of juvenile sex trafficking, but was properly identified from fingerprints both times.
So we're not going to get into the psychology of that.
Right.
Because this is not about him.
It's not about him. And he clearly just came from a very bad place and was in a very bad place when this happened. By the time he was sentenced in December of 2020, Rini apologized to Timothy's family and said that he wished he could have taken it all back. He was sentenced to 2 years in prison for aggravated identity theft, but two other charges were dismissed. The judge ordered that he should undergo counseling, and he was to be eligible for parole after 4 months. So Jim and, of course, Amy's family were all devastated by this, and Jim later said that it led him into another depression.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. But, you know, ultimately, they all had compassion for Rini. You know, they understood he must have gone through some terrible experiences to get to the point where he would go to a stranger and claim to be Timothy. And, you know, just in general, like he did eventually say that he had basically seen a 2020 special on Timothy's case. Mm-hmm. So that's like how he knew the information. He did know.
Yeah.
Timothy's grandmother, Alana Anderson, told reporters, quote, "I feel so sorry for the young man who's obviously had a horrible time and felt the need to say he was someone else," end quote. Well, this was a devastating event for Timothy's family. They were grateful that it got his story into the news once again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we talk about it, I feel like, every episode. I mean, the more media coverage, the more attention to a missing person, you know, the more chance that they'll be found.
So right. Yeah.
Any kind of coverage is good.
Especially because this really propelled it to the national stage. Yeah. Right. And Jim Pitsman to this day thinks that his son is alive out there somewhere. Like, he takes his wife's note at face value and does believe that she gave him to a family where she thought that he would be safe. So I agree
with that. There isn't any evidence of foul play.
Nothing conclusive, right? I mean, there's the cough medicine that may or may not have been given to him. There's the blood that may or may not have been from a nosebleed.
But it doesn't make any sense. Like, if she did something to him, if she killed him, why would you leave these brand new clothes that you just bought for him with the body? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know.
Those are not meaningful objects.
Right.
You know
what
I mean?
Like the craft kit that you bought for him. Yeah.
Right. To me, it sounds like she was prepping him to to go somewhere else, to go on a journey, whatever.
Yeah.
Not to murder him. So, I mean, the evidence suggests, and it's not conclusive at all, but the evidence suggests that she handed him off to somebody, that her what she said in her note was true.
Kara's theory, because she also, I mean, obviously she does believe that Tim's, like I said, she was ready. She's packing her bag. She was ready to go, right? So she does believe he's out there as well. And her theory about what was kind of going through Amy's head at the time was Amy had already decided she was going to end her life. And she said as much in her letters to her family. So I mentioned she left the suicide note at the motel and that she sent the other letters. And all of the letters said basically the same thing. But Kara said that, you know, in her letter, she said specifically, nothing you could have said or done would have made me not do this, meaning taking her own life, right? Like, you could not have talked me out of this. Yeah. So what Kara thinks is that, you know, in her own brain, like, this was her logic, that she didn't want Timothy to grow up with the stigma of having a mother who took her own life. And so in her mind, it was better for him to have a new start with a new family somewhere else and not have to grow up with that.
Yeah, maybe. I understand that that's her working theory. But, you know, you also have to keep in mind Timothy was 6.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's not going to have any memories of his dad or his mom. So even giving him to this new family, under whatever story you tell him, he's never going to forget his mom and dad.
I don't know, because there have been stories where, like, kids have. And it's not like they forget 100%. Like, they remember kind of bits and pieces. But, like, kids not remembering, even at that age and even older, like, is not that uncommon. So there could be a teenager out there somewhere right now who doesn't remember that his name is Timothy Pitson, who doesn't remember that his dad was Jim Pitsman and his mom was Amy Fry Pitson, but
has vague memories,
a lingering sense of something being weird.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Who doesn't have any baby pictures.
Right.
Who, you know, doesn't have...
They were destroyed in a fire.
Yeah. You know, like... There very well could be like a 16-year-old kid out there who just like kind of feels like something's been off, but can't put his finger on it, you know? And that is like what you hear in cases like this, right? Mm-hmm. Like that they don't know, like, it's not like, yeah, he's been sitting somewhere for 10 years going, I'm Timothy Pitson and nobody's listening to me. Like,
yeah, no, I wasn't saying that,
yeah.
But kind of along the same lines, like it doesn't just go away.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So yeah, there is probably something there. And again, and I think that's, again, why Jim and Kara and, you know, the rest of Amy's family are so happy to get this out on the national stage, because not only is it getting Timothy's picture out there, because Nick Beck, of course, has done an age progressed photo of him. You know, they did one for the 10-year anniversary. So we have it on our blog of what Timothy might look like now. But yeah, I mean, you know, a 16-year-old kid will be on the internet and maybe he'll come across something. And we have seen that in other cases. Like, The Fall Line is a great investigative journalism podcast, and they did a series on babies that were kidnapped from Atlanta's Grady Hospital. And so they were infants and they obviously didn't remember anything because they were like 2 days old.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, one of them eventually discovered, like, was just on the internet and kind of discovered, like, she had suspicions because things just had not added up in her childhood. And then eventually, you know, discovered that she had been kidnapped. And so, you know, things like that do happen. So I think that's what Jim is thinking, right? Like, that maybe there's a 16-year-old kid out there who might be inspired to do a little digging.
Yeah, I hope he's right.
Right, because, you know, Jim and Kara obviously have been shattered by this. Neither one of them has moved on. I mean, Kara's marriage ended. She had a whole host of problems. She could not move past this at all. And Jim, according to that Chicago Magazine article, I mean, his house, so he moved out of that Aurora house. Like, he tried to stay because it was Tim's house, and if he came home, you know, but he said it was just so incredibly painful that he just could not stay there anymore. So he moved, but now, you know, you go into his house and the wall in his living room is just completely covered in pictures of his son. And so over the years, you know, he's tried to date, but he'll bring a woman home and she'll say, "Hey, what's with all these pictures?" And then, you know, it just
spirals from there.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're waiting. There's nothing else they can do at this point. They're hoping, they're waiting that just somebody comes forward and says something, regardless of what happened to Timothy, even if, you know, God forbid, he isn't alive anymore.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there was still somebody else besides Amy who was involved in that, you know, just something. For their part, you know, detectives who have worked on this case over the years kind of go back and forth as to their theory on whether or not Timothy is alive. Angeline Hartman, who is Nick Meck's media director, has also come down on the side of Timothy being alive. She told Chicago Magazine, quote, "This is what I tell people. No one would have ever believed that J.C. Duggard was alive," end quote. Now, for those of you who don't know, J.C. Duggard was a girl who was kidnapped when she was 11 and found 18 years later after being held captive by a couple who had changed her identity. Authorities say that in cases like this, there's always someone out there who knows exactly what happened to the missing person. It's been 10 years. Let's hope that it won't be much longer before someone finds it in their heart to say something. Timothy Pitson has been missing since May 11th, 2011. He was 4'2" and approximately 70 pounds, with brown hair and brown eyes. He was 6 years old when he went missing. He would be 17 today. If you have any information on what happened to Timothy, please contact the Aurora Police Department at 630-256-5000. You can see all the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social. And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
We'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Dethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.